Good morning, everyone. We welcome you today, this morning, Sunday morning. It is April 29th, 2018. We welcome you all to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. Thank you for joining us. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, located in the United States of America, Plainfield, New Jersey. Okay. Our topic today, everlasting punishment, everyone's favorite. But before we get into it, Florence, would you lead us in our morning prayer?
Sure. Mrs. Eddy's prayer given at the Massachusetts Metaphysical College. Oh my God, I offer as a consecrated gift upon thine altar a heart dedicated to thy service, lips speaking only words of charity, love, and truth, thoughts striving to be only the true thoughts of the mind of God. Help me to endure unto the end, strong in the faith, powerful in the truth, all the influence that I can bring to bear, all the force of tongue or pen that is mine, I offer in thy service. May heaven help, consecrate, and accept.
Thank you. And then miscellaneous writings, page 279. We today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind, for then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form and mind spake, and form appeared. Okay, our golden text this morning. Acts. Repent and be baptized, every one of you, in the name of Jesus Christ, for the remission of sins, and ye shall receive the gift of the Holy Ghost. So, Jeremy and also Florence wrote on the forum about that. I'll let you start with that. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Okay. Well, it reminded me of In Pond and Purpose, where Mrs. Eddy wrote, quote, "The baptism of repentance is indeed a stricken state of human consciousness, wherein mortals gain severe views of themselves, a state of mind which rends the veil that hides mental deformity," end quote. And it also reminded me of last week, where it said, "All the ways of a man are clean in his own eyes, but the Lord weigheth the spirit." So these things just got me thinking about how before I thought I was doing right and everything around me was wrong. So coming here and learning about Christian Science, I see that the change needed is in myself. And I can actually do something about that, so that's really wonderful. To go from being a victim to having dominion.
Thank you. Sometimes it's hard to see within ourselves what's wrong, what's the problem. That's why in Psalms, the psalmist says, "Cleanse thou me of what?
Secret fault." Secret fault.
Thank you. Good prayer to pray every day. There were so many things I was doing wrong and had no idea that I was.
Because what makes them a secret? To
whom? They're not uncovered. You don't recognize them.
Yeah. They're just unrecognized. Unrecognized by me. And the desire to have secret faults that are unrecognized by me, but are in me, to have those revealed. It takes a lot of courage, doesn't it? Most people don't want that to happen. Most people don't want to have their secret faults exposed and have to change. And why is that?
They're discomfortable in matter, I guess.
Yeah.
Because of pride.
pride because they attach them to themselves. They take it personally, and they think that when they're exposed, they're embarrassed. God forbid we should be embarrassed.
I know I had a concern before that these changes might take away my identity.
Yeah, and that's what the devil wants you to think. That's why the devil wants you to attach them to you.
And mainly not to recognize them, protect them. That is why Mrs. Eddy and the adamant of error. What are some of the adamants of error?
Self-will.
Self-love, self-righteousness.
Self-righteousness.
Self-justification. And that's how you keep these errors going, because you justify what you've done. And that blinds you to it. And as Colleen brought out yesterday, is she here?
Yes.
What did you say brought on blindness?
A pride.
Yeah, right. Right, pride. You can't see it when you're so full of yourself, while meekness and humility give you the sight to see it, the eyes to see it. And then, as Jeremy says, to go through the process in pond and purpose. And if anyone thinks they're beyond it, they better think again.
Yeah, so let me ask, would anybody who's actually exposed every secret fault that they've ever had and corrected it and is now perfect, would you please raise your hand?
And that's
so we're all subject to this.
Raise your hand and expose yourself.
Well, we are on the phone. Nobody raised their hand.
Yeah, no one raised their hand at this table. So we're all, and this is a constant process. It's not something you do and then you're over it and you've reached Nirvana or whatever it's called. It's a constantly cleansing yourself of that, those secret faults. So, and if you have someone loving enough to point it out, Suzette says, who is telling of the foe in ambush? And when you have someone lovingly enough to tell you, she also says, listen and what?
Obey.
Listen and be wise. Wise. Wisdom. But it's very hard to do. I understand. I mean, you know, originally when I came here and people pointing out my faults, I was madder than a hatter. or I would go sulking and crying for weeks, whatever. I did not take it in the right spirit. It took a long time. But one thing I knew that I was miserable, and I knew I had to be doing a lot of things wrong. And that, I always went back to that. So no matter how I fought, no matter how I justified, I am a good person. My motives are good. Whatever I did, I was obedient to God. That was my justification, and I believed it. And because of that, it hid my secret faults until finally Mrs. Evans beat me up enough that it began to chip away at me. And the bottom line was, Mary, you're not so perfect, you know that. You know that much. So maybe you better listen and be wise.
I know this can only bless me.
Yes. It can only bless you.
So you're saying that you was hiding behind goodness?
The yes. Mask. The mask is goodness often.
Human goodness.
And I had a great deal of it, and that's why Bignell Young says that can be the most difficult to heal. I mean, that's why the Mary Magdalene was so repentant. She knew she'd done wrong. Mm-hmm. But when you're humanly good, you don't see it. Think you're doing right.
A real goody-goody can be very offending to other people.
It certainly can. Thank you, Fairly.
But in their mind, they're good.
In their mind, they're good. In the meantime, the corpses are falling all around. Oh, gosh. So we are going to discuss, and I want you all to start thinking about it now, everlasting punishment. It's the topic, as I said, we all love. We all look forward to it. Oh, dear. Because in thinking about it, I have a list of things that kept me in everlasting punishment. You understand it's not something that you die into. What is it, Carol?
That you die into.
You don't die into everlasting punishment. What is it?
You're living in it.
Yes. And I will say, I was not afraid of death. I was afraid of living. I can say that. I remember feeling that. I thought death would bring release to all this terrible agony I was suffering. So I was afraid of life. I remember thinking that. What a terrible admission. But I make it for anyone else who has ever felt that way, because there is a light in the darkness. Now, I was so grateful because Florence left some books. She left some books, and two books. And one of them was her blue book, and I had to laugh because it was so full of markers and things written, so beloved. She called that we would send it back to her, and of course we are. And then the other book was a little notebook of Bicknell Young articles, and they were, someone had given to her a couple of years ago. They were articles maybe we have somewhere, but I don't ever remember reading them, so Jeremy's making copies for people that would like it. But in one of those articles, actually there's one about Christian Science Practice, he says, Earth is our mortal concept of heaven. Heaven is our real awareness of Earth. Heaven is Earth correctly understood. Mrs. Eddy says that in Science and Health as well. But the point being, you can either have heaven on Earth, here and now, or you can experience hell on Earth and what would seem like everlasting punishment. So, I will start off. One of my everlasting punishments I indulged in was self. My life was all about my life. The more I thought about myself, the worse things got. When I went to a practitioner, it was all about getting my healing. I always thought about my body, my home, my family, my dog, my car, whatever else. It was all self-centered. I realize now that was everlasting punishment. That was pure hell. Because the more you think about yourself, what?
The worse off you are.
You get deeper into it.
You get deeper and deeper into it. The more problems you have, your kids go haywire, you don't get along with your husband, your finances go to hell. Mrs. Eddy says, 14, Gary, you can read it. Or,
Man's enslavement to the most relentless masters, passion, selfishness, envy, hatred, and revenge, is conquered only by a mighty struggle. Every hour of delay makes the struggle more severe. If man is not victorious over the passions, they crush out happiness, health, and manhood. Here, Christian Science is the sovereign panacea, giving strength to the weakness of mortal mind, strength from the immortal and omnipotent mind, and lifting humanity above itself into purer desires, even the spiritual power and goodwill to man.
Thank you. Now, you notice in the list, and that's not a complete list, but one of them is definitely selfishness. And she says, Christian Science is sovereign panacea, giving strength to weakness of mortal mind. And what does it do? It lifts humanity what?
Above itself.
Mm-hmm. Above itself into pure desires, even into spiritual power and goodwill to men. As far as I'm concerned, this is one of the main ways to get out of everlasting punishment, certainly to get out of this sense of self. Pure desires. Your desire has to be much greater than what you want for your life. We're uplifting all mankind. Once you do that, it's so liberating, and all that selfishness dissolves. But if you refuse and you continue to be me, myself, and I, you will go down in that spiral until you awaken to this truth, which she expresses here. Now, I'm giving you all a big chance to tell me your everlasting punishments, because this, I'm going to go a little farther with this, because this is what Parthens wrote about on the forum, a mighty struggle. First, I wondered, goodness, what in the world is he talking about? All these, how the Greeks fought and everybody. It was a, what was it? What was he saying? It was a fight to the what?
Death.
To the death.
Victory or death. Take your choice.
The human mind, in whatever form it presents itself, even the human goodness, is what?
Is a murderer.
It is out to kill you. And it will. What does the word aggressive mean? Doesn't Mrs. Eddy talk a lot about aggressive what?
Mental suggestion.
Yes, aggressive mental suggestion. What does aggressive mean?
It's not nice.
It's very not forceful.
Fighting.
It's unrelentless.
Unrelentless.
Mm-hmm. Persistent.
Persistent. Act of hostility. Jeremy?
Well, I mean, I certainly know about that. Having that relentless voice in your head.
Yes.
You start to believe it.
Yes.
But it means... It's an act of aggression.
Yes.
It's out to conquer.
It also, one of the definitions, it makes the first attack. That's why if you're sitting benignly, you know, just da 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 it will hit. This idea of a blank mind, that's why you have to be very careful of this, you know, meditation, blank your mind out. No, you don't.
You stand porter at the door of thought. That's an active defense against aggression.
So, I'm sorry Parsons isn't here to speak for himself, but I would think that this was the point of this, and how these people who were fighting had to be so strong and combative themselves, which was something, as a nice little Christian Scientist, I did not want to do. But I was being eaten alive by, as Jeremy said, the stream of suggestions. So, but the good news is, as Eddie says, Christian Science is a sovereign panacea, giving strength to the weakness of mortal mind. So what does that mean, Lawrence?
I think the Bible speaks to it. If we stick with the truth of our being, we overcome. The strength is in God, truth, love.
Thank you. You cannot combat it on its own terms. You cannot combat it with aggression, human will aggression. It has to be getting yourself out of the way and letting God work. And one of the big ways is to get out of your own personal sense of self and begin to work for a larger cause that lifts you up. Whatever holds human thought in line with
unself-love.
Receive directly the divine power.
Think of that. When I first read that and embraced with that, man, I said, holy Moses. Every time you do a watch, every time you pray for something other than your own little pocketbook and your own little physical ailments, you are receiving directly the divine power.
And this is what...
Please, go ahead.
Now, this is what Carpenter demonstrated when he went to Mrs. Eddy's house and he was afraid that what's he going to do when he gets sick. And he did get sick. And what did he do? He prayed for everyone. He just took thought off himself and just prayed for everyone. And he, you know, when he came back to himself, he was fine. It was gone.
Yes.
Thank you.
And what's your favorite quote from Fidelity article?
Go ahead, Bruce.
Too soon. We cannot turn from disease in the body to find disease in mortal mind. And its cure in working for God.
Mrs. Evans gave that to me when I first came here, and that was, as they say, a life changer. So, and whatever you're doing, as we've talked about, it's not just doing this specific work for church. Whatever you do, you should be working for God. It's all for the glory of God. If you bring it to your office, you bring it to your home, you teach it to your children, the classroom, wherever you go, you live it. And you will find yourself rising up out of what seems to be the torture of the human mind. Okay, now it's your turn. Anyone else would tell me everlasting punishment, how they've experienced and what you do to get out of it is the most important of all.
And being nice. That was my big thing, being nice. I wanted people to like me, and I just was going to be nice. And I remember Mrs. Evans telling me, are you pleasing person or are you pleasing God? And that woke me up. It took a long time to get out of it, however. But that was it. Who am I pleasing? And when I really, really determined to please God and to speak up if I needed to and to do what was right, that was the big change.
Thank you. And she has
changed.
And
as a result, you blessed the people around you more than you would have had you tried to please them.
Well, ditto for me. I'm a people pleaser, I admit it. But I have to say, the struggle to come here and start the struggle, it's a relief. It's a relief.
And we're so relieved to have you here.
I'll ditto that.
I know. We call Linda and Shardy the two angels. Well,
I have always tried to be a perfectionist, and that's been a real struggle because I would beat myself up if I would make a mistake. And through coming here, I'm learning it's important to, look at your mistakes and don't be embarrassed and make the right changes. And there's no such thing as human perfection. And that's blindness and pride. And so, you know, you can't be afraid of being judged. No one really judges you, and I'm learning that here. There's just love, and it gives me more strength to just, you know, move forward and face my fears and, you know, don't worry about being so perfect. That's not the goal.
Thank you so much.
Wanted to add one. The inclination to get offended is a real everlasting punishment item. Until I finally learn that, you know, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, and if something happens, didn't go the way that I wanted it, it's not for me to get offended over, because after all, God is working his purpose out. That's cause for rejoicing and quite a release from the anguish of things happening and getting offended over, which is pointless, actually.
Yes, and taking offense. You don't get offended. Jesus was never offended. They called him all kinds of things. Did he ever justify himself? No.
No need.
No need.
No need to, no.
If you're right, there's no need to say anything. And if you're wrong, there's also no need to say anything.
If you're wrong, you better not try to justify it.
I guess for me is just remembering past mistakes and just trying to free myself from the tormenting of, oh, you shouldn't have done that, or that's why you're here in this situation now, and trying to accept God as my Father, that he loves me. And I find that I'm still struggling a little bit with it, accepting God's love. And it's all tied up with whatever went on in the past. And to me, that's the big boogaboo there that I have to, that I have to come to accept God's love for me.
Thank you. Yes, and God requires the past. It's something we have to give it to him. You see, when we're disobedient, because God requires the past is over. When we continue to indulge in thinking about the past, we are disobedient. Therefore, the punishment starts.
It goes on anyway.
Goes on. This is where our obedience and obeying the first commandment is our answer. Because all these things we talk about are disobedient. Being nice is disobedient. You're not being honest, for one thing. You're covering. We call nice a four-letter word here, as you know. You're covering up. And I found, because I was, boy, that was my goal in life, to be nice and please people. I put myself way out on a limb. Because I wasn't true to myself, and no one knew who I really was. Garrett used to drive Gary quite crazy, because he didn't know who I was. It was always whoever I was talking with, I agreed with. you just can't do that. You cannot do that. If you don't agree with someone, you've got to say that. It makes life miserable. It is. Carol is right. It's everlasting punishment. You cannot be nice. Disobedient, you're not honest, you're a hypocrite. It's a lot of awful things under the guise of nice.
And the reason it's a mess is because it's all personal. God is not in the middle of it. That's why every relationship we have, mother, son, husband, wife, parent, every relationship we have has to have God as the basis of it. Otherwise, it's going to be a mess, and it's going to cause everlasting punishment. Until you put God in the middle and make God the basis of the relationship, you're not on solid ground. You're on quicksand. That's why Christian Science is the sovereign panacea. It is the truth about who we are and our relationship with one another. We are brothers and sisters, period. God is our master, period. On that, you've got solid footing. You've got the way out of every problem you've ever faced.
Mine was a personal sense of not doing anything right, and it took me a long time of knowing that the Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the work. And if God does the work, it's got to be correct, and I get myself out of the way. And if I don't, then I'm in everlasting punishment. And that goes along with self-pity. I can't do anything right. I'm just a poor mortal. And I'm just, you know, I just can't do anything right. If I ever hear that out of Sharon's mouth, she knows what's going to come. Because I've heard it every once in a while. I will not abide that. Because I can't hear that in my head. I can't hear it in her head either. It gets whacked.
And it's a blessing. It's a life-saving by being rebuked for that. Because it is a healing process of being rebuked.
But people use that as an excuse for not doing what they should. Right? The human mind uses that as an excuse to be lazy, doesn't it? For not going the extra mile, not making the effort.
And then along with that goes, well, I can't do anything right, but look at that person. They do everything right. Jealous, jealous, jealous. And that's on the list. Of man's enslavement to the relentless master's jealousy. Because right when you're putting yourself down, then you're thinking, oh, look over there and look what they're doing, and I can't do that. They're so much better. They had a better life than I did. Yada, yada, yada. Disobedience to God.
Harrison.
Harrison are
odious.
Yeah. You indulge in it, you will suffer. Was you speaking?
Would it be in the final analysis, it's a choice of integrity, because people volunteer which side of the cross they wish to be on. So you can go to the infinite treadmill to oblivion and dance the drama solid of self-enslavement, or you can just obey God. It's a choice.
Right.
The person themselves volunteers, and if you wish to specialize in taking umbrage and attaining the state of victimhood, you have to take that, you have to reach out and grab it. Or you can have a choice of just letting it go.
Thank you. William.
So true. We face this choice every day, don't we?
Yeah, it's a choice. It's integrity. Which side of the cross do you wish to be on? You can continue dancing the drama solid, mastering the art of self-deception, and go full way to Crazyville. Or you can allow God, by choice, to dismantle the false self, so to speak. Become a transmitting utility for him, instead of a thorn in the side.
Did you say Crazyville? I like that. Put yourself in Crazyville.
Right.
If you've achieved halfway to Crazyville, it seems to be the popular trend seems to be complete the course and go full Crazyville for some reason. There's a tendency out there, and also I spot that in your psychological makeup. You know, but this being nice thing, it's nice to be nice. It's nice to be nice, but what's more important is to be effective.
Right.
Being nice is interesting, but being effective is important, and that would be to try and get aligned with a superior kind of deity, for want of a better word, or God. Perhaps, could it be?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have noticed, you watch, you're absolutely right, a nice person is never effective. They get nothing done. That's true in politics, too. To negotiate with the devil, to all this negotiation, appeasement, nothing happens for years and years and years. It takes a little toughness to get the job done. And everyone will hate you for it and call you names, but that's part of the territory.
The movie in Winston Churchill movie that just came out, that's what stood out to me, is for 10 years or more, he was telling them to stop being nice to Hitler. And everyone's being nice, and they just were taken down one by one. And it took his stand, and he took so much grief for his not niceness.
Mm-hmm.
He
sure
saved
did.
His country, and probably saved the world, actually.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, if you have that tendency, you work to overcome it, because it will. As I said, it puts you out on a limb, you become ineffective.
I really began, and no one liked me. For all that I was trying to be so nice, everyone ended up hating me because I was so untrue. No one knew who I was. Mm-hmm. So it certainly doesn't achieve anything good. Okay.
Yeah, people can respect you if you tend to say to the truth. May not like you, but respect you, yeah.
Thank you.
Resentment, one, for me, withholding resentment.
Thank you.
It's just, that's very painful and very exhausting.
Yes, it is exhausting. You go round and round with the injustices that you have endured. And
that he has, you know, she has some pretty harsh words. She talks about hatred as a plague spot.
Spreads his virus and kills at last.
Yeah. Yeah, you do yourself the worst harm by.
And we talked yesterday, Gary talked about, you know, this idea of forgiving. An error cannot be truly forgiven unless it's repented of. But if someone has done you an injustice, you have to forgive them whether they've repented or not. And I wanted to make that clear. You have to forgive them in your own heart. Why?
Because it will work on you.
It will.
Yeah, you're the one suffering if you hold it.
Yes, I've heard it say that resentment is frozen hate. So if it's frozen hate, you're not getting anywhere. You're just going down.
That's it.
Yeah,
thank
that's
you.
A good one.
I like frozen hate.
Right. If you don't forgive, you hold the error as real in your own thought, and you do everybody harm, including yourself.
That's why the second daily duty is so important.
It certainly is. The rule for motives and acts. It cleanses you. We talk about cleansing every day. Doing the daily duties is a cleansing. She covers everything. Neither animosity nor mere human personal attachment.
So the motives and acts of the members of this church.
Thank you.
And I think it's important to destroy the error in your own thinking also, because Mrs. Eddy says, to forgive sin, it has to be destroyed. So if you're still carrying it on around, holding it for someone, then it's not really destroyed, is it?
Yes. Very good point.
Exactly. Be not judged. Criticizing, thinking critical thoughts, or speaking critical thoughts about other people, it's just going to harm you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's insanity repeating yourself.
And what Florence says, too, if you hold the error on the person and you think it's real and you think it harmed you, you are giving it a life it doesn't possess of its own, and you're putting flames on the fire. Oh, that's what, you know, that nasty divorce I had, and now look how I'm suffering, and that person was just a you-know-what, and oh, my gosh, and so... What good does that do? Does you no good at all? Does do anyone any good?
My problem was the dishonesty, and I didn't even know I was resentful. That was what was shocking to me. So I came here.
Well, and that's, again, cleanse me of secret faults. I didn't know how resentful I was, how prideful, how jealous, all these things were seething under this nice persona.
I think revengeful was one of mine.
Revenge?
I just wanted to see someone punished, you know, for whatever wrong. I just couldn't let it go.
Yeah, right. Justice, right?
That's right.
If it's a maxim in law, that the remedy is forgiveness.
Anyway, I don't know if you can speak up. We're having a little trouble hearing you, William.
Oh, sorry. I believe it's a maxim in law that the only true remedy is forgiveness, and if people have a tendency to go for revenge, it's a dish best served cold, and you better dig two graves and get two spades.
Right.
Two graves and two spades. What does the lesson say about vengeance?
Vengeance is mine.
Right.
doesn't mean we have this horrible vengeful God, but it means there are laws in operation. And if you, again, if you disobey those laws, you will suffer the consequences. So if someone did you wrong, they will suffer. Sooner or later, it will happen. Just leave it alone. As Mrs. Eddy says, that will be far worse than anything you could have done to them. But if you hold it in your heart, yes, everlasting punishment. Another thing I wanted to mention, too, is this idea where people try to control each other. You see it in relationships. Often it's a man toward a woman, but it can be the other way.
In our case, it's you controlling me.
Most definitely. I'm doing a very good job of it. Well,
poor Gary.
I know, he's long-suffering and kind.
All right.
So, well, you see, this time I will take a man. How does a man exercise his control over a woman?
Money,
thank you.
Putting them down?
Thank you, most definitely. They'll put you down. They'll call you names. They do it in public. Public humiliation. They'll always make, and this is vice versa. The woman, these are all the techniques I use on Gary.
We're just kidding.
We're just kidding. So putting them down in public, saying, controlling the money.
Guilt.
Yes.
Or some control even what you wear.
Yes. How you look. Telling you how to look or act.
Lose weight.
Making decisions without including the other person. Making decisions. Yes.
Suppressing freedom of choice and pressing buttons.
Yes, suppressing freedom of choice. They always make the decision where you're going to have dinner, what movie you're going to see, what color the house is going to be. It's a domination. And if it goes unchecked, it's a form of everlasting punishment. It's a very toxic relationship, and eventually it will lead to one or the other getting seriously ill or other things. So what do you do about that?
You become an enlightened man, and the wife is always right.
You become an enlightened man, and the wife is always right.
You could make a bed and do a few dishes.
Well,
the wife is always right doesn't work either.
No, we're just joking here, but yes. You have to do something. These are breaking your chains. You cannot endure it in silence. You've got to do something. And if you don't do something, as I said, down the road, there'll be something very worse. This was something Mrs. Evans always talked about, and she saw it with the male dominating the woman. Usually they don't want you to go to church. You know, they make fun of your religion or what you're doing. And it's some of it is trained, this dominating male, but women can do it too, vice versa. So the form of everlasting punishment, it's best to break those chains early on than to endure them. And God will show you the way there. Anyone else on everlasting punishment?
I think mine was sense of false responsibility with my family and my children, feeling I'm responsible for them and feeling guilty if it doesn't go the way I think it should. And so I've been learning to just leave them to God and put them on the altar, and that's my biggest thing. And I'm still learning it, but I've come a long way.
Yes, you have. And because of that, you see the blessings come. Once you learn the lesson and have truly turned around, then things begin to change. But this is not, this isn't a process of a day or a week or a month. Sometimes it takes years. You're continually tried. But we have to rejoice and be glad. As we've talked about, the warfare with oneself is grand. You handle it day by day. But don't go into that, don't go backwards into that. Remember what it was like, everlasting punishment. That's what stops me. I say, uh-oh, Mayor, you won't go back there. That wasn't a lot of fun. Thank you.
Modern Music at volume 10, 24/7. That's everlasting punishment.
Yes. Blaring music, I think he's saying. Blaring music, or
yeah.
Blaring anything.
Modern music, it's pretty gross.
Well, that's true. And it blocks your ability to hear God. All of that, any of that, yes, the media, where you're pounded with the movies and the television and the music and the novels, it can be a form of everlasting punishment.
If you allow it.
If you allow it. That you can turn off. Unless, under any circumstances. All of these things, and maybe we should conclude with that, they can all be turned off. And you must be as aggressive with it as it is with you. That's where the niceness or the I'll do it tomorrow doesn't work. There's no time like now. And Mrs. Eddy says that. Get to work now. It's not going to get better tomorrow.
She says it's going to get worse.
Gets worse. Every hour of delay.
And as Ronald Reagan said, if not now, when? Mm-hmm. And if not us, who?
So we're going to end on, in Collected Writings, there's an article called Overcoming Death. And Gary, you can explain briefly what it's about and then read this for this paragraph.
This is Bicknell Young telling of an experience he had once while out on a lake in a boat. And it was a very instructive experience, because he, in a storm, he was thrown overboard and drowned. And he was at the bottom of this lake. And all these thoughts were coming to him that he was finished. And instead of accepting them, he denied them, and he argued against them. And every thought that came to him that wasn't right, he argued the truth back to it. And it became more and more aggressive, and he became more and more aggressive with it.
And it said even though he was thought he led a pretty good life, the voice said, oh, no, you're a terrible person. It brought back every sin he ever thought he ever did. It was relentless. So he said, at a time like that, you've got to have your arsenal ready.
And?
He did.
30 or 40 minutes later, he shot back up to the top of the lake and was rescued. And he explains, how did I get the best of this error? By being bigger, better, stronger than it was. It was just another question of dominion and control. It talked, I talked. It claimed dominion, I claimed dominion in his name. It presented an argument based on false belief. I presented an argument based on truth. It got aggressive. I got aggressive. I knew when the argument first started that I had to get hooked up with something bigger than it was, so that I could be bigger too than it was and get the best of it. I remembered what Jesus said about his power, where he got it, and that he was always master. That was my cue, so to speak. And from then on, I made real progress.
And so will you. There's a victory over everlasting punishment. Any of us who've been there and done that. So keep at it. And we will go on now and have a powerful service. And thank you all for joining us and all of your comments. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.